Joseph, Master of Dreams. Commentary for the June 11th, 2022 Sabbath School Lesson by Stephen Terry, Director, Stillwaters Ministry. www.visitstillwaters.com. Abraham had taken another wife, whose name was Keturah. She bore him Zimran, Jokshan, Medan, Midian, Ishbak, and Shua. Genesis 25, verses 1 and 2. The story we are dealing with this week is that of Joseph, who went into slavery in Egypt, but nonetheless rose from the depths of an Egyptian prison to be second only to Pharaoh. It is an incredible story, mythological in its scope, of villains and the heroic exploits of the young Hebrew. Based on the literal account, these were exploits not to be equaled for 400 years when Moses finally arrives on the scene. During those lost four centuries, the entire world of the Eastern Mediterranean experienced the Bronze Age collapse, brought about by repeated droughts, a profound change that even the story of Joseph reveals nearly brought Egypt to her knees. Coupled with massive earthquakes throughout the region and waves of invaders, referred to as the Sea People, that leveled several cities. The devastation destroyed major civilizations, including the Hittites and the Mitanni. Those that survived suffered so greatly that it took centuries for them to recover any semblance of their former glory. The time is often referred to as the Mycenaean Dark Ages, a collapse greater than what was experienced with the much later collapse of the Western Roman Empire. The loss of archival records as royal record libraries were burned and their contents buried for thousands of years under ash and debris meant a dearth of documentary evidence to validate legends preserved for centuries in individuals' memories and passed on orally between the Bronze Age collapse and the Iron Age scribes who wrote it all down. This is not much different than trying to construct what happened to the Roanoke colony settlers in the late 16th century in what is now the state of North Carolina, based on the scant evidence available. Four centuries later, we still don't know what happened to the over 100 settlers in that colony. The historical context becomes important when we try to parse the story of Joseph. The confusion in the text makes it appear this is not an account to be taken very literally. Joseph, as the oldest child of Jacob's favorite wife, Rachel, is given preferential treatment by Jacob over the children of Leah and the two handmaids. Joseph preserved in his being the memory of Rachel after she died, giving birth to Benjamin. Joseph knew her. Benjamin never did. Jacob could look into Joseph's face and see some of Rachel looking back at him. This relationship between the two incited jealousy in the other children, and they decided to do something about it. While tending the flocks near Shechem, about 160 kilometers, or 100 miles, from Beersheba, where Jacob had relocated, they surely discussed their jealousies. Jacob sent Joseph to check on his brothers, only for him to discover they had moved even further north, over 20 kilometers, to Dothan. Imagine their surprise when, being so far from home, they spotted the familiar many-colored tunic Joseph wore coming across the fields toward them, the object of their rage pursuing them even here. They decided to rid themselves of the problem and toss Joseph into a pit. Then they sit down to eat and discuss what to do with him. At that point, the problems of the text become apparent. We are told they see an Ishmaelite caravan and decide to sell their brother to make some profit while ridding themselves of him. For some reason, although Reuben purposes to rescue Joseph from the pit and send him back to his father, he knows nothing of the plot to sell Joseph, for he is surprised and shocked to find Joseph gone from the pit. All sorts of reasons have been suggested for this ignorance over the centuries by Talmudic scholars for this, but there is no definitive answer to be found in the text, and even logical deduction fails to provide a reason that stands out. But this is only one of the unexplained conundrums in the text. While they plotted to sell him to the Ishmaelite caravan, we are told that they instead sold him to Midianites. Then, when he arrives in Egypt, we are told Potiphar bought him from the Ishmaelites. The problem here is that these are not the same peoples. Ishmael was Abraham's firstborn through Hagar, the Egyptian. He participated in the covenant of circumcision with Abraham as he was entering his teens, a year before Isaac was born. While Midian was also a descendant of Abraham, he was a son of Keturah, the woman whom Abraham married after Sarah's death. Keturah is an enigmatic figure. We are told nothing of her past or origin. This has resulted in much speculation over the centuries, some even suggesting that Keturah, which means incense or fragrant, was Hagar, who had returned to Abraham's bed after Sarah's death. According to Islamic sources, Abraham continued to assist Ishmael, and that interaction may have increased after Sarah's death. So it explains the possibility of Hagar returning, but does not explain the name change. However, Jacob, which means deceiver, was eventually called Israel, one who prevails with God. So there is precedent for exchanging a less than desirable name like Hagar, which means forsaken, to something more favorable like Keturah, which means fragrant. Adding to the confusion about who bought Joseph and took him into Egypt to be sold to Potiphar, both the Septuagint and the Samaritan Pentateuch tell us in Genesis 37:36 that the Midianites sold Joseph to Potiphar. But in 39 verse 1, they tell us that Potiphar bought him from Ishmaelites. Even modern translators have added to the confusion. For instance, in an apparent attempt to deal with the problem, the NIV has Potiphar buying Joseph from Midianites in Genesis 37:36. As is apparent from our opening text, a passage repeated in 1 Chronicles chapter 1, verse 32, Medan and Midian are not the same person, although they were brothers, both sons of Keturah. One probable reason I can think of for all these discrepancies would indicate why Hebrew scholars would propose that Hagar and Keturah were the same person. When Abraham sent Hagar away at Sarah's insistence, the only male she had to head up her clan was Ishmael. Therefore, just as Israel became the father of the Israelites, Ishmael was the eponymous head of Hagar's / Keturah's descendants from Abraham. Ishmael's name being used interchangeably with Midian's would support that possibility. As far as the substitution of Medan for Midian, the similarity of the two names could mean simply that a scribal error was made at some point along the line. I cannot help but wonder if we would have had more clarity were this not an Iron Age attempt to reconstitute an earlier Bronze Age mythos. Sometimes I feel like the paucity of the text causes us to be in a similar position to trying to determine the type of proverbial cherry tree that George Washington cut down. Was it pie cherries, sweet cherries, choke cherries? But as I said earlier, the details are less important than the lesson. This is true all the way back to creation in the opening chapters of Genesis. There may be those who would die on the cross of literalism over these things, but they miss the point, and even much of the beauty of these metaphors. I've dealt with some of this earlier in the quarter, so I will not belabor the point here. What then is the lesson to be gleaned from the story of Joseph going into Egypt? I see two major points. The first point is that Joseph epitomizes what it means to be an Israelite. Unlike his brothers, who are only looking out for themselves, with dishonesty being used to further their personal agendas, Joseph truly sought to be the humble and honest servant to others. His honesty and faithfulness meant conflict with those who had neither, first with his brothers, and then with Potiphar's wife. Joseph became acquainted with the injustice that selfishness brings into the world. Unlike others who might lament their fate and drop into depression over what they had experienced, feeling God had abandoned them, Joseph continued to trust in God's providence and humbly served others where he could. His ultimate rise to power was a narrative endorsing a radical departure from all the lying and deception that had gone on for generations in his dysfunctional family. Honesty, humility, and faithfulness pay off in the end. When we look at the world today, unfortunately, we see a world that is shaped more by the values of Joseph's errant brothers than by Joseph. Therefore, whether literally true or myth, we need this reminder now as much as they did when it was written. This story was a light written in a time of darkness, with civilization striving to recover. The challenges that brought civilization to its knees still confront us. The second point that can be drawn from this story is related to those challenges. The very disasters that may have us running around like Chicken Little shouting, "The sky is falling," may be the means God is able to make use of to elevate those who are his humble servants to positions of responsibility, to save many by their faithful and compassionate service. Joseph was not created by those adversities. He was prepared for them beforehand by seeking to develop a character that would allow God to make use of him in ways beyond his imagining. This begs the question, am I doing what I can to have the character God intended for me to have? Or am I just drifting along like a leaf in the breeze, going whichever way the prevailing societal wind happens to take me? Do I even understand what my character is and what it could be? Stories like Joseph's are not valuable because of exacting literalism. They are valuable because they make us ask questions like these. Because of that, they are timeless. Thank you for listening to this podcast. You can find the written version of this podcast at our website at www.visitstillwaters.com, in addition to footnotes referencing some of the works that I referred to in the article. You can also find hundreds more commentaries and podcasts like this one at the website. May God richly bless you and your family.